Greetings, one and all, everybody. We're so glad you're here this morning. Got a good full house here, and looking forward to spending some time in the book of Psalms. If you'll open your Bibles, please, to number 35, Psalm 35. I'm going to ask my wife to run back into that classroom, and when you come in the door, turn hard left and look on the left. I think I left my Bible in there. Thank you, Ron. Thank you. Thank you. I got so used to having it, you know, up here after a morning class that I teach from the pulpit, I went and left it in there. So we're going to be looking, though, at Psalm number 35 in just a minute. And this 35th Psalm, the first 8 verses of which you heard at the start of our assembly here this morning, is really an unusual Psalm. There are 18 others, 19 altogether, but in a book this large, that's not a whole lot of Psalms, but they are Psalms that are really troubling, if you will. They provide for us a bit of a challenge. They are troubling because they fit into this category, which is called imprecatory psalms. An imprecation is when you call a curse down on someone. An imprecation is when you are hoping that things will go badly for them. You saw in the reading this morning, heard in the reading, that David spends 8 verses, really, calling down an entire list of terrible things upon a certain group of people who have been his enemy. In fact, just those first 3 verses, he says, "Contend, O Lord, with those who contend with me. Fight against those who fight against me. Take hold of buckler and shield, and rise up for my help. Draw also the spear and the battle axe to meet those who pursue me. Say to my soul, I am your salvation." And it goes on from there. Well, now, David is uttering some pretty tough words, isn't he? David is asking God on his behalf to engage himself in the warfare of the day against his enemies. Now, this is a buckler. Most of us today are unfamiliar with those things. It's really nothing more than a small shield. This one looks like it's been manufactured and sold, you know, on Amazon.com. But in the old days, you know, they'd be much more rudimentary and often with leather straps on the back to hold onto. But it is a defensive weapon. A buckler would be used like this. And for those of you who are interested in such things, there is an academy that you can go to sign up and learn how to fight with a buckler today. Don't you see that a lot in modern armies? But it is a shield, only a very small one is very common in ancient warfare. Of course, your regular shield would be very much larger, even to the covering of the great majority of the body. And what was first mentioned, David said, were defensive weapons. Lord, take shield, you know, and buckler, and help me out. But not just defensively, he also asks for the spear. Here is one that very likely comes actually from David's time. Excuse me. Here are 2 others, again from different countries, but at that same time. Working in copper and with bronze and with iron, all 3 metals were being used at that time. And so David is also asking that God go on the offense for him as well. And he's not calling for lightning. He's not calling, you know, for a flood. He's not calling for a natural disaster. He's asking God to use these weapons, which more likely, you know, means, Lord, I'm asking you to be involved in helping me as I'm using those weapons. He doesn't think God's going to come down, you know, and swing an axe, but he himself was often involved in warfare. Now, the warfare of the day had a great deal more than just these things that he had mentioned there. So I thought it might be good, just kind of a sidelight, to recognize how well prepared they were. David's younger days, of course, he had slain Goliath. 1 Samuel 17 gives us the armor that Goliath had, a bronze helmet, scale armor of bronze greaves, that's the leg covering that you have there, a bronze javelin was slung between his shoulders, the shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, the head of his spear of iron, and he had a shield carrier. So much equipment that he had someone that had been tasked with helping him carry some of that as he would get to the place of battle. David is asking, as you read in verses 4 through 8, that his battles be successful, that the armor and the weapons of the day might be useful in defeating his enemy, that both he himself and those who were in his army or were defenders of his would be involved in these things. And it is quite a list of requests. He wants God to be on his side to contend with his enemies, to fight against them, to use the buckler and shield, to use the spear and the axe, to let them be ashamed, let them be dishonored, let them be turned back, let them be humiliated, let them be like chaff, let the angel of the Lord drive them, and that angel will come back, let their way be dark, let their way be slippery, and the angel of the Lord pursue them. Let destruction come, let the net catch him, let destruction fall. Whoa! What happened to mercy? What happened to grace? You know, where did compassion go? This word loving kindness that we read so much about our God, you know, where does all that go when David is calling down these imprecations upon his enemies? Well, as a matter of fact, I like Psalm 35 because these things are really kind of middle-of-the-road imprecations. You will find in the Psalms where David gets much more personal and much more, you know, bloody, we might say, graphic in the things that he wants to happen to his enemies. And so it's important, brethren, that we get this lesson. Because if you can get through life without an enemy, if you can get through life without a problem, if you can get through life without confronting someone who is opposing you to such an extent and in such a desperate manner that you would not want to ask God to help you out, then let me buy the house next to yours. Nobody gets through life without these things. You're going to have problems. They are absolutely inevitable. They might range, you know, from pretty minor stuff all the way up to and including someone who quite literally wants to see you dead. So what should be our relationship? What should go on in our minds? Is it fair for us to pray a prayer like this? And it's a difficult question to answer. We, reading our New Testament, seeing about the self-sacrifice of the Lord on the cross, reading so much of the works of the Apostle of Love, you know, John, have come to have it predominantly in our mind, I don't think this is a mistake, but predominating, you know, a sense of love because we want grace, we want mercy, we want forgiveness. We learned in the New Testament that we should forgive others if we want what? Be forgiven. So those lessons are not lost on us, and those lessons are still true. Was this then a mistake on David's part? No, by no means. Was it done away with the Old Testament? No, by no means. I certainly don't think so. It would be wise for us then to just dig into this a little bit and make sure, though, that we identify what I think are some of the guidelines here and the boundaries of such a prayer. Psalm 35 will help us with that. And then learn to do this properly. Brethren, what David did, he did as a man after God's own heart. What David did, he did with impunity. God didn't condemn him for this. God responded numerous times throughout David's life, as we read in the Old Testament, exactly as David asked. And the things he's asking, brethren, lead up to and include the very death of his opponent. I mentioned that the angel of the Lord came up twice. We need to think about this for just a minute, what David was asking. He is asking for the common weaponry of the day to be used against his enemy so that they will be ashamed, dishonored, and humiliated. He wants more than just their physical defeat. He wants them to just be crushed, you know, personally and in the reputation-wise, you know, from the people around him, by this defeat. And then, blow like chaff, but if you're blown like chaff with the angel of the Lord driving you, brethren, that'd be a pretty strong wind. And then, your way is dark and slippery,
with the angel of the Lord pursuing you. Okay? On a rainy night in a muddy field with a rhinoceros behind you would be a welcome relief next to the angel of the Lord. Okay? That'd just be manageable next to the angel of the Lord. So the things that David is calling for right here include destruction, capture, and then destruction a second time, to be utterly annihilated. How are we to relate to this? How many times have you prayed such a prayer? If you prayed such a prayer, did you feel guilty about it? You know, afterwards, what's going on here? Well, first let me point out this lesson in verses 7 and 8. How David is restrained, he is disciplined, he is not running rampant. He says, "For without cause they hid their net for me, without cause they dug a pit for my soul. Let destruction come upon him unawares, and let the net," what? What's in the middle of verse 8? "Let the net which he hid catch himself into that very destruction. Let him fall." You see how careful it is that David, though he called for all those things in that previous list, is only calling for that which had already been sent against him. He is only asking for that balanced response. Maybe you're hearing a lot about these days as we're thinking about, you know, a limited attack on Syria, still in the news now for this last week. You know, what exactly is that? Well, in David's view, a man after God's own heart, writing out a psalm which is inspired by God as well, as he presents this information, David is a man who has a serious problem. We'll see how serious in a minute, but he is a man who still yet has his wits about him. He is a man who still yet is in control of his mind and of the things that he wants, and therefore his body and how he's going to respond. All he is asking God for, if we might call to mind another phrase, is an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. He is not overreacting. He is not running amok. He hasn't gone, you know, ballistic. He isn't enraged and losing his senses. He has gone before his God in prayer, carefully remembering and enumerating what has transpired against him, calling upon God for only a similar response for those who had treated him so unfairly, so unjustly. But now there's another aspect of this we need to take, you know, just a moment to consider. Look at verses 9 and 10. "So all these things will come upon these people," then he says, "and my soul shall rejoice in the Lord, it shall exult in his salvation. All my bones will say, Lord, who is like you? Who delivers the afflicted from him who is too strong for him, and the afflicted and the needy from him who robs him?" Now, at your first reading, it sounds like David's, you know, the silhouette here, right? You see right here, right? Like he's just so happy that all the things he had asked for had, or he hopes will, fall upon these other people. But brethren, again, I think we need to be careful. As you're reading that first list, read it carefully, and it is not a wild man calling, you know, for the end of the world on these people. He's only asking for a balanced response. And in this case, he stipulated what would happen if God responded. In verse 9, "My soul shall rejoice in" what? "In the Lord. It will exult in his salvation. All my bones will say, Lord, who's like you?" Everything that David does that is described as rejoicing is rejoicing not in his personal triumph over his enemy, nor for the terribleness, you know, that has befallen his enemy and the triumph over him. He is rejoicing very carefully only in one direction. It is toward his Lord, giving God all of the credit, recognizing he is entirely subject to the Lord's action in all of this, not taking any of the credit for himself or his army or whatever else was involved when these things actually took place. He is just simply, abjectly offering his appreciation to the God of heaven who did it, in his view, for him. Not like Nebuchadnezzar, right? Back in Daniel. Not like Nebuchadnezzar, who had strolled, you know, very proudly upon his walls and look at all, you know, that I have done. Not like Nebuchadnezzar at all. So when circumstances befall us and enemies mistreat and attack us, when terrible things befall us, how should we pray? What should we ask for? What attitude should we have? It is one in which justice and no more, no less, but no more will take place. And let that justice be controlled, restrained by my God, and let me recognize then that my God is responsible for all of this and not me. Now, you'll remember this, those of you that were in our Proverbs class, we looked at this one evening, spent quite a bit of time on it. So for those of you who weren't able to be with us on those Wednesday nights, Proverbs 24:17 warns us against, you know, an evil spirit with regard to an enemy's downfall. Do not rejoice when your enemy falls. Well, Psalm 35 uses the word rejoice. Do we have a contradiction? No, we have David's son writing, do not rejoice when your enemy falls. Don't let your heart be glad when he stumbles, or the Lord will see it and be displeased and turn his anger away from him. When we put these together, what we're discovering is that nobody should be happy when someone is suffering. Ariel Castro is the best known monster, you know, in contemporary history. Ariel Castro, 10 years ago, kidnapped 3 young women in their teens, kept them for 10 years, abused them in every conceivable way. Finally, they escaped. What did he do this week? He killed himself. He hung himself in his cell. He got life imprisonment, and you should see the articles. You probably have. People rejoicing and putting him down, and why he couldn't handle for 30 days what he had done to those young women. And that's all true. But be careful. See? So now he's dead. How should we feel? Well, don't be glad about his death. Don't be glad when anybody dies. Be glad for justice. Be glad for God's response to circumstances. But if you take it very personally, you make the Lord mad. You displease him. He's looking down from heaven thinking, who do you think you are? Okay? So, David knows this lesson. He probably taught it to Solomon, his son. And he's not violating it in Psalm 35. But truly, brethren, it can be kind of a fine line to walk. So to help us walk that line, read these next verses too, because it'll shed some light on the circumstances. In verse 11, David says, malicious witnesses rise up. They ask me of things that I do not know. In other words, they're laying traps, they are malicious, they're accusing him of things that never happened. He can't answer these questions because it's false, very reminiscent of what Jesus was facing. In verse 12 he says, they repay me evil for good to the bereavement of my soul. But as for me, when they were sick, my clothing was sackcloth. I humbled myself with fasting, and my prayer kept returning to my bosom. I would have bowed as though it were my friend or brother. I bowed down mourning as one who sorrows for a mother. But at my stumbling, they rejoiced and gathered themselves together. The smiters whom I did not know gathered together against me. They slandered me without ceasing, like godless jesters at a feast. They gnashed at me with their teeth. David, in these verses, reveals to us now the circumstances that lay behind that prayer in those earlier verses. He has been betrayed by people that he at least had an acquaintance with and for whom he had done nothing but good in every way, up to and including seeing them sometimes fall, have problems, and he fasted for them, he mourned for them, he prayed for them, he wore sackcloth for them. These are not strangers. These are not, you know, just alien unknowns. These are people that he knew well enough that he could have gone before God, begging God to help them out of their problems. He'd done it time and time again, and then they betrayed me. Now, there is that line, you know, smiters whom I did not know. These are apparently enemies that are sent by the people that he did know. Remember the life of David and Saul sending armies after him. People David didn't know were now, you know, attacking him, but they were sent by Saul, who he had played the harp for, to soothe him when he had the problems with the evil spirit. He had done nothing but good for all his life. He killed Goliath for him. You know, he had done all these good things for him. And now he's betrayed by these people. So brethren, that list of imprecations that David called down on his enemies, these weren't strangers. These weren't people you read about in the newspaper somewhere, you know, you had no relationship with. David had really been through it with these people, and they had meant something to him, and he had prayed like for a mother for them, and then they turned on him. As a matter of fact, knowing this, and brother, I'm astonished at his restraint and discipline, and how carefully, and with such an even keel, that he works through this prayer and what it is he's asking for. I can see myself kind of running amok. You know, I treated somebody so well, and then to have them betray me in this manner. And so David is a man horribly abused by people he had loved and tried to help, and now in this betrayal, still yet he asks only for justice and for this. Lord, let's see an end to it. So in verses 17 and following, Lord, how long will you look on? Rescue my soul from their ravages, my only life from the lions. I will give you thanks in the great congregation. I will praise you among a mighty throng. Do not let those who are wrongfully my enemies rejoice over me. Neither let those who hate me without cause wink maliciously. See, they're plotting together. For they do not speak peace, but they devise deceitful words against those who are quiet in the land. In other words, innocent, doing nothing. And they open their mouth wide against me, and they said, aha, aha, our eyes have seen it. See, there's a gloating over David. 22, you have seen it, Lord. Do not keep silent, O Lord. Do not be far from me. Stir up yourself and awake to my right and to my cause, my God and my Lord. Judge me, O Lord, my God, according to your righteousness, and do not let them rejoice over me. Do not let them say in their heart, aha, our desire. Do not let them say, we have swallowed him up. Let those be ashamed and humiliated altogether who rejoice at my distress. Let those be clothed with shame and dishonor who magnify themselves over me. Brethren, the great majority of the actual prayer here at this part of this psalm is just, Lord, let's stop. Bring this thing to an end. And again, I have not the time this morning, but especially in verses 17 through 26, brethren, look at this great heart of David. Look at verse 18. I'll give thanks in the great congregation. I'll praise you among a mighty throng. He's not bargaining. He's not saying, I'll serve you if you do this for me. He'd already been doing this. He is doing this. He'll continue to do this. Whether God responds sooner or later, never he'll continue to do this. This is David's way of life, to thank his God in all circumstances. He just wants to thank his God now that it stops, that this evil be brought to an end. Let's go on then, brethren, to the final verses of the psalm. 27 and 28. Let them shout for joy and rejoice who favor my vindication. And let them say continually, the Lord be magnified, who delights in the prosperity of his servant. And my tongue shall declare your righteousness and your praise all day long.
What is David about now in the last two verses?
Lord, my prayer is not just for me, relief from my problem, and justice for those who perpetrated it against me. Lord, I'm thinking about a much bigger picture. I'm thinking about everybody else in Israel. I'm thinking about everybody else in the kingdom of these Jews. I'm thinking about those who worship you. I'm thinking about brethren who I hope will shout for joy and rejoice when they see this justice. And they will magnify, in the middle of verse 27, you, Lord. 28, my tongue shall declare your righteousness and your praise all day long. Lord, all I'm asking is for another reason, to be able to say to others, do you see how great and good that God is? Do you see how he cares for his people? Do you see how he responds to their prayers? Do you appreciate that he is always concerned about us? He does answer our prayers. It may take longer than we want it to, but he will do it with his wisdom, in his time, and with perfect justice, so that when all is done, praising God is the ultimate goal of David, even in this, an imprecatory psalm. So you'll find people today say, oh, you know, the Old Testament was just brutal and vicious and covered in blood, and yeah, there's a lot of warfare in there. But they have missed entirely the setting that's taken place, misunderstood entirely the justice that this world always needs, and failed completely to recognize that David's only and preeminent desire throughout all of this is that God get the glory, whatever happens. So here's the lesson for us in Psalm 35. Yes, you can and should pray for justice. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth is not a thing of antiquity that we've learned better than, which should be thrown away. Justice, fairness, equity is a right and good thing under the New Testament, even as it is under the Old. Pray very carefully, with great dignity and with great discipline, that only the justice of God befall anyone, everyone who sins against you. Only the justice of God. And then pray that prayer so that when God's justice is manifest, the world will glorify him. The world will respond in love and appreciation and in service. That the friends of David and God both will work together in these circumstances so that his friends, those that love the Lord, will respond properly and grow stronger in the service of their God, that God might get the glory. Brethren, we all want God to get the glory because we did something really grand and good. This psalm is saying, let God get the glory when you suffer terribly, and God uses those circumstances to reveal something about his character, about his power, about justice, so that all of those who will love him can respond with the rejoicing and the glory that he deserves. Pray then that you be not led into temptation. Jesus taught us that well. It's discussed in the Bulletin article this morning. And simultaneously pray that when you are, whatever the circumstances may be, God will receive the glory when you pray carefully and properly for justice and only that to the glory of God and the expansion of his kingdom. Psalm 35. Appreciate your attention this morning. As always, we offer this invitation. If you are one who has been studying, you see the need in faith to respond with repentance and a confession that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. If you are ready to be baptized into Jesus Christ for the forgiveness of your sins, if today is the day of salvation for you, then let it be so. Come forward and let it be known. If you have a need for prayer, something that you're struggling with, or for someone else whom you love, if you have a need for a Bible study, questions answered, let it be known. Come forward, please, and speak with me as we now stand and sing.